At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday morning, June 28th, 2023. It is the Beating the Book podcast, MLB Q2 derivative show, all from a betting perspective. It's Gil Alexander. This is the longest running thing that I believe we have done on this podcast and on the Betting Dork podcast before that. The Megapod might have something to say about that. But if it's not the Megapod, it is this, where Mark Borchardt, base winner, joins me to do quarterly derivatives betting outlooks in Major League Baseball. Mark joins us now from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. Base Winner Podcast, basewinner.com, at Base Winner on Twitter. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good, and I think that I will hold to this, that I was your first guest on your podcast.
You were.
And it's an honor. It really is. You've done so good. And I call you the voice of sports betting. And I know sometimes I say it tongue in cheek, but I really mean it because I think you are the voice of sports betting. And you've done such a good job. And not just analyzing games on a daily basis and doing a daily show, but being an ambassador for sports betting.
Oh,
and
it's gone
a long
nice.
Way since. And it's gone a long way since we started. I mean, it makes
yes.
you feel a little bit old in a way, but.
Dude, we met in a forum. And we were scolded for contacting outside of the forum or something like that. But I knew immediately. I was like, oh, this is my kind of guy. Nerd fest in baseball. And I remember.
It was great. And I was great. And I'll never forget the metrics that we made up watching spring training baseball.
Yes.
That's classic
yes.
to me.
We're complete dorks. We would go to spring training together in Arizona. And we would make up metrics in the stands because something's wrong with us. Do you remember the greatest metric we made up, though? We should probably bring this up.
Oh, I think it was the long leash
yes.
cool M, LL Cool M. And I really think that I can make that into a metric now because I was thinking about the other day, Gil.
It had to do with managers and their quick or slow hooks on pitchers. So it was long leash cool manager, right? And we named LL Cool M or something like that. Really hasn't caught on quite yet, but we got to work on it.
Well, I haven't developed it yet, but it actually makes sense because some of these guys, you know, the way they balance a bullpen, I mean, really makes a difference towards the later part of those games. But that's in development, along with a G6 model that I'm going to make for you with six inputs.
Oh, nice. I like it. Mark always struggling with putting more Giants magic into his model. One day he will get it perfected as the Giants win their 10th straight road game last night. Giants 2.5 out of the NL West. For those who are unfamiliar with what we do here. So this is essentially, we're essentially at the halfway point of the Major League Baseball season. A couple teams have gotten to the halfway point. The other 28 are about to. They're just a game or two shy. And so what we do every quarter, roughly 40, 81, 120 games, is we go back and we look at a bunch of betting stats, both from a, you know, very widely available money line and run line perspective on teams, starting pitchers, who would have made you the most money, who would have cost you the most. We talk about umpires, who are the most reliable over umpires, the most reliable under umpires. Mark is invaluable to that because he actually has historical umpire data to corroborate if this is just a, you know, sort of flash in the pan thing for half a season, or if this is actually consistent with how these umpires have been. And then it gets a little more proprietary. We do first five inning stats, and we do first inning stats for pitchers. And the whole exercise is really designed to come up with, okay, Is this just something that we've, you know, just happened for half a season and it's more narrative and fun to talk about? Or is it legit predictive of what's to come? And so will it help us, you know, it will help inform baseball bets both day to day and long term into the future? And we've had a ball doing this for so many years. And Mark, let's start at the very top, which is the biggest money line winners in terms of baseball clubs for bettors this season. And who do you have per your numbers? I will rely on covers for these, covers.com. Who do you have as your top three baseball teams that, again, the bizarro exercise, let's say you bet on this team every single game thus far this season when they were a favorite. Let's say you bet on them every single game when they were an underdog. So it is bizarro. No one actually does this way. But if you did, this would be the biggest grossers for bettors. Who do you have, Mark?
I've got Baltimore, Arizona, and Miami in that order.
Yeah, and Covers has Arizona now today, just a tick above Baltimore. Both would have earned you more than 14 units. Again, bizarro exercise, betting them every single day, whether they're a favorite or an underdog. They have Cincinnati third and Miami fourth. By the way, the Giants would be fifth. Those are the five teams that would have earned you double-digit units this season. And that's, you and I talked about this when we did this on a numbers game yesterday on VSiN. Usually we have a surprise. These are like textbook five overachieving teams, right?
Yeah, you would think. The only one that to me is kind of in that mix in the top 10, and I think I have them like sixth or seventh, are the Braves. Because right. You're just laying so much sauce with that team, you would think that would get you. But they've just been so good. That team is so awesome, Gil. Wow, the hitting and relief pitching's good, but the lineup is amazing.
And Acuna at the top is just amazing. But yes, to Mark's point, Texas, another overachiever based on what their pre-flop consensus season win total was at six. But yes, then it is Atlanta and Tampa Bay. And think about what Mark just said, which is those teams are laying wood more often than not, but they're so good or have been so good that even if you bet them, you know, just brain dead wise every single game, you would still be, you know, in the money with both of those teams. Not as sexy as the other ones we mentioned, but still in the money. And really, when it gets down to it, it's not like half the teams put you in the money. It's a little less than half that would actually have you if you blindly bet them every day. At the bottom, it's sort of the opposite of what we just talked about with Atlanta and Tampa Bay. Kansas City and Oakland have been so bad that even though they're only, you know, dogs each and every single night, seemingly, and really not even seemingly, they are, they're the biggest hemorrhagers for bettors. So if you had bet Kansas City or Oakland every single game this year on the money line, and by the way, if you're doing that, you're not doing this right. Let me just point that out. You're not doing it right. But Kansas City would have you down almost 24 and a half units, and Oakland would be down 22 units. Goodness, man. Mets, Cardinals, Padres after that. Those come into the sort of way underachieving based on expectation. Similar to what you have?
Well, yeah, I've got Cardinals worst, Royals, A's, and Mets in that order. And the Cardinals are just really, I mean, I missed with the Cardinals. I thought that they'd be right at the top. And I think that even like if you were to come to me and say, if you look at their xFIP minus year to date, it's 99, which I would have taken that. Like as a, you know, collectively as a team, I'd have been like, yeah, okay, well, they're average pitching, but they can really bash. And they haven't been able to put the numbers up that I projected, although they're 7% better than average. So what's interesting is they're fielding. They've 26 runs that they have not saved. So they've allowed extra runs, you know, defensive runs saved. And you would consider them a good defensive team. But that Cardinals team just perplexes me, Gil. It always, for the last 3 years, I was bearish on them when they were good. Now I'm bullish on them when they're bad. That's not a good thing.
Here's the question. So of the ones that we mentioned on the top and we ones mentioned on the bottom, how many of those do you think are outliers and won't be sustainable? Because to me, like, I really feel like Arizona, Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Miami, and San Francisco, and Texas are actually good baseball teams. But which of the good do you think, I don't see it continuing? Which of the bad, on the other hand? Because you've said with Oakland, you actually think they'll be better.
Yeah, I think Oakland will be better. I think Miami, you know, it's an interesting team because you look at them profit-wise straight up, and they're you know, I have them at 12.6 units, but if you look at them versus the run line, they're not as good. So that means that, in fact, I think I'm showing a negative number for them, Gil, on the run line. So that means that they're getting a lot of luck in the one run games. And so I think that, you know, I know Jason was really down on Miami earlier, and my numbers for their offense were low on them too. So I think that that's the team maybe that's going to slide is that Miami team, Gil.
Okay. And Oakland would be the answer to the bottom where you'd be like, yeah, they'll be better. Like your adjusted season win total is higher than their current adjusted season win total.
Yeah, I've got them. Let me see if I can look at that real fast. Yeah, they were yesterday 48.5 wins over under at Caesars. So that's their season win total, and I've got them at 54.4. So yeah,
okay,
quite a bit.
Don't necessarily fade them as rampantly as you might think. By the way, if we broke down the money line numbers into home roads, Arizona is actually the number one away team on the money line. If you had bet them every single game, favorite or dog on the road, they'd have you up almost 12 units. Baltimore also would be number two on the road. They'd have you up over 10 units. So most of the units that the number one and two overall money line teams have gotten you have been as road teams. Cincinnati also third best on the road, so it's consistent. So who is the best at home? It's actually Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay at home, they'd have you up over 10 units, almost 10 and a half. They're actually a losing proposition if you had bet them every single game on the road. And as far as the, by the way, one other weird outlier, the biggest difference between a home and road split in terms of money line, Washington, the Nationals would have you down almost 9 units, betting them blindly at home, and up almost 11 units on the road. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah,
I think I've only played the Nationals once this year. That was two nights ago, and they lost.
I was going to say, I haven't played them barely at all, if at all. In terms of go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's hard to get a good position on them, and that the starting pitching is worst in baseball for me, and so it starts there, and so that's why I haven't really been able to back them at all this year, Gil.
Yeah. Mets are the worst on the road, by the way. They're the third worst overall in the money line, but they're the worst on the road. Most of their loss is away from Citi Field. Kansas City, by far the worst team at home. Almost 18 of their 25 units have been lost as a home team. By the way, run line, best run line team. Now, this is, of course, as a favorite, you're a 1.5 run favorite. As a dog, you're a plus 1.5 run proposition. So when you're winning big. When you're losing, sometimes if you can keep it within, you know, to a one score game, you become the best run line team in all of baseball, or you're just crushing teams on a nightly basis. The number one run line team, a de facto power ranking, if you will, Mark, who do you have as the number one run line team?
Are you talking about at home, or are you talking about
just
overall?
Overall, we're not going to do splits on run line. Just overall.
Okay. Overall, run line team, I have Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore. Oh, just nipping Cincinnati. Both Baltimore and Cincinnati, the best run line teams in baseball, according to covers, over 18 units strong. And Arizona would be third. So it's really the usual. Texas would actually be third. Arizona would be fourth in terms of covers numbers.
I'm curious to know where the Yankees fall in for you on that.
The Yankees would be, excellent question, in terms of the run line, they're actually the seventh best.
Isn't that wild? I'm looking at these things going, yeah. Wow, Yankees are there. So that's a weird one.
So I guess when they win, they crush, or they lose a lot of, I mean, I can't remember what their one run record is offhand, but you'd be up 6.5 units on the Yankees betting them on the run line. By the way, the Nationals would be eighth on the run line at 5.5 units to the positive. So there is a few surprises in that regard. And by the way,
that Yankees one's surprising to me.
The worst on the run line, again, the Royals, you'd be down 29 units betting them. So like when they lose, they don't even keep it close. And again, if you're betting the Royals on the run line every single day, you're doing this all wrong. But anyway, that's just an interesting sort of overview of that. In terms of starting pitchers, now this has to do with, you know, when these guys take the hill, what is their team's ultimate win-loss record? Now, again, is this sustainable? Is this predictive in any way? You be the judge. I'll get Mark's opinions. Dean Kramer of the Orioles are 11-5 when he takes the hill this year. Boyd of the Tigers are 9-6 when he takes the hill. Henry of Arizona, Tommy Henry, they're 9-2 are the Diamondbacks when he takes the hill. Those are the three most profitable pitchers in all of baseball. Like Spencer Strider, who I think should be the NL Cy Young Award winner at this point. Others would disagree. Just by contrast, he's sixth, right? Even though the Braves are 14-2 when he takes the hill. But in terms of money, because remember, a lot of these guys that I just mentioned, Kramer, Boyd, and Henry, when their teams, Baltimore, Detroit, and Arizona, are playing, they're getting plus money. So from a money perspective, they're 1, 2, 3. Are any of those three guys sustainable on this, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, like I said yesterday, you know, Kramer was good on Seinfeld, but I don't really see him as a high level major league pitcher. And neither Henry. I think that you know, the Diamondbacks are going to have to get an extra pitcher, I think, to be competitive in the playoffs. I don't think they can just do it with Gallen and Kelly.
Bottom, yeah. By the way, the bottom of that starting pitcher, money-wise, there's 184 starting pitchers that qualify. No surprise, Jordan Lyles of the Royals. The Royals just won their first game with him as a starter, so they're now 1-15. He'd have cost you 13 units, almost 13 units, if you had bet Jordan Lyles games for the Royals blindly. And again, God help you if you are. Schmidt of the Yankees is second worst, 9 units in the red if you had bet him blindly, because the Yankees are 4-12 with him on the hill. And then some familiar names: Zach Greinke, Jameson Taillon of the Cubs, and Jordan Montgomery, 3, 4, 5. By the way, Blake Snell, 7th of the Padres, and he's pitching great. They're also on the worst list. Blake Snell is the most unsustainable of that. In other words, he's going to completely reverse, you would say?
I think so. You know, I like Montgomery and Taillon. I have them better than an average pitcher. So I think that, you know, there might be some one run stuff in there too for Montgomery. But I think that Taillon and Montgomery are better than average major league pitchers, Gil.
Okay, let's get to the umpires, because this is great to have you on with this. So again, I'm getting these from covers.com. Mark has his own proprietary numbers. So these are umpires, and again, you can see umpire assignments at a site like StatFox. What was the Twitter handle that you recommend for umpire listings?
It's at Umpire Crew.
At Umpire Crew. Umpire Crew is the Twitter handle. They have umpire assignments. And as you were saying, you can find those assignments there, or you figure out just who's the home plate umpire one night, and then you just do the rotation of the crew.
Yeah, that's for any game that's like second, third, or any game other than the first game of the series. You just, the first base umpire, then the next night, that, you know, let's say tonight, the first base umpire. And then tomorrow he'll be the home plate umpire. So it rotates. I guess that would be counter. No, that'd be clockwise if you looked at the diamond. So first base goes to home plate next day, basically.
Okay. So the most reliable over umpires thus far in Major League Baseball this season. Nate Tomlinson, 8 of the 9 games, at least according to covers, 8 of the 9 games that he's been behind home plate have gone over. Mike Estabrook, 10 of 13. I believe it says here, Jordan Baker, 8 of 11, Alfonso Marquez, 9 of 12 to the over, and Chad Whitson, 7 of 12 to the over. Those are the most reliable over umpires in all of baseball thus far this year. So in other words, maybe their strike zone is the size of a thimble, and guys are just able to hack away or take their base. Do any of those names jibe with your historical numbers as being reliably over umpires?
Yeah, Marquez has been consistently over, and kind of the methodology on this is I took the last 4 years. So from 6/26 of 2019 till now, and Marquez has like 112 games. And then I used a walk percentage and a strikeout percentage to come up with like a projected ERA. And basically, long story short, is in games that he umpires, I have my total projection 8% greater than it would be normally. So, and it makes a difference, Gil. I mean, if you're looking at a projected total of 9 and it's 8% greater than it should be, and I'm going to challenge my math skills here, it'd be 0.72 runs greater. So that could make the difference between making an overplay or not making an overplay.
100% it could. Absolutely. And so again, just be cognizant of that if you know, let's say you have a lean on a game to the over, to the under, but then you see the home plate umpire is going to be someone who is, you know, consistently the opposite of what your handicap is. Maybe Maybe you don't switch your bet, but maybe at least it takes you off the bet, gives you enough pause for that. By the way, the opposite.
That's such a good point. Well, I just wanted to touch on that because I just have a practical example of what Please. Happened to me on Monday night. So it's the first game of the series in the White Sox Angels game, and my model projected over pretty sizably, but by about a run. So say I'm gonna play. I don't know who the umpire is, but I'm gonna play the over. Well, the umpire turned out to be Bill Miller. Bill Miller is my biggest under umpire, and the game went under. And like, if you watch the game, like, you know why Bill Miller is an under umpire, because he was just calling balls outside of the strike zone. So it could bite you in the butt if you don't do it. And it did bite me in the butt too. So I usually don't make a play on the first game in the series only because I don't know who the umpire is, but I couldn't resist on that one. It looked too good for me from a modeling standpoint, but I did get burned on it, Gil.
Well, that's a great segue into who have been the most reliable under umpires when they've called balls and strikes this year. And the answers to that question per covers.com, Corey Blazer, Phil Cuzzy, Trip Gibson III. Don't want to leave out that he's the third. Bruce Dreckman, Bill Miller, and Brian Knight. Cue your Brian McKnight annual joke here, if you would, Mark. What was your joke yesterday?
Oh, no, we have to. If we do that, then I have to start these ratings back at one.
Oh, there you go. There it is. Mark Borgen, everybody. It's Brian McKnight joke. So, but you just mentioned Bill Miller. There he is. He's been super reliable as an underump this year, and you have him historically as a underump, yes?
Yeah, he's historically the base winner, number one under umpire.
Jeez.
118 games over the last 4 years, so decent sample size. And then you mentioned a couple of them that are kind of in my top 10 unders. Cuzzy's number two.
Cuzzy, yeah.
And then Trip Gibson, and it's funny you said the third. You know, I don't know what's wrong with me, Gil. On my modeling, I don't have the third, and I just have Trip Gibson. I mean,
wow.
Gosh,
you.
I'm slipping in my old age
you
here,
really
but yeah. Yeah. He's in the top, I guess, 12. So, three names there that are under, that are consistently under.
And so that's, you know, we're doing a Q2 derivative show right now, but that's to have those historical numbers is key here, because what it shows you is that it really is, when it comes to Miller and when it comes to Cuzzy, this is no aberration. So it's the opposite of what I talked about with the reliably over umps historically, like Marquez, Alfonso Marquez, who you mentioned, which is, like, apparently their strike zone, Miller's and Cuzzy's, is massive, one would think, just generally speaking. And so the pitcher gets the benefit of the doubt. Or maybe, like, as we've seen in baseball this year, the umpiring has just deteriorated. Like, each and every year, it seems like the home plate umpire calling balls and strikes generally in baseball has just gotten worse and worse. We were talking yesterday about the Diamondbacks-Giants game on Saturday was just a joke. Like, Merrill Kelly didn't have to be close to the strike zone. It was a strike. Meanwhile, Sean Manaea getting squeezed inside the strike zone. That Mariners Nationals game a couple nights ago, it was 8-4 Mariners, but the bases were loaded for the Nationals in the ninth, and the pitchers, like, the strike three called to end the game with the bases loaded was 2.5 inches outside of the strike zone, and the Mariners announcers were like, it's a called third strike, Mariners win it if you say so. Like, it's gotten that bad. So maybe
that was a great call, Aaron Goldsmith. Yeah,
yes.
that was a really good call, if you say so.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? I'm glad I have you, because I know you're a big tennis guy, and I've wondered this from a challenge standpoint, because I've seen it done in tennis, but I'm no expert on it. But it seems to me like it's fairly unobtrusive in tennis. Like, hey, if it's in or out, they'll challenge it. It'll get reviewed, and it's, you know, right back to play. And I'm wondering if you would be a proponent of having, like, three challenges for each manager would have that for ball strike calls.
Yes, absolutely. But first of all, the tennis thing changed the entire sport, right? Like, you know, we grew up, people of a certain age grew up hearing John McEnroe screaming at umpires, Jimmy Connors screaming at umpires, Ilie Anastasi, if you're even older, right? But McEnroe famously was, you got to be kidding me. That's all out of the game. I mean, now, it's not standardized over every tournament, but typically, right, the biggest tournaments, some tournaments don't even have lines people anymore, Mark, right? They just have an umpire just to oversee things, but it's all done electronically. There is absolutely no argument. There are some where, you know, the players, there has been instances where the players have wondered if the, you know, if the technology has is precise to the line. I mean, we have seen that, but generally that's an outlier. It's completely changed the game. It's unobtrusive, to use your word. It moves it along. No one gets, especially a game that's as mentally focused as tennis, no one gets bent out of shape, generally speaking. I won't say no one, but once in a blue moon it happens, not really regularly. And in baseball, like, enough with the umpire lobby. Like, oh, you can't take balls and strikes away from us. Or if you argue balls and strikes, that's the quickest hook of them all. Like, stop with that shit already, if I may. Like, I mean, it's 2023, for God's sakes.
I totally agree with it, with you. And there's nothing more frustrating than whether you have a fantasy bet or a bet game, and you see that, and you're like, well, wait, I'm seeing this is a ball, and they're calling it a strike, and it's just costing me money.
Yes,
it's just very frustrating, especially when the DraftKings of the world are sponsoring Major League Baseball, and I don't know, like, if Major League Baseball took a hard look at it, I think that they'd be like, hey, we need to change this. But I don't know why they haven't taken a hard look at it, Gil.
Well, your point about that's costing you money, like, so that Giants-Diamondbacks game. So I had a bet on the Giants. I'm basically betting the Giants brain dead every single night. Like, really, I'm like, the analysis is very thin. I'm just like, this team's not losing anybody. Like, they've got it figured out with their pitching, with their back, you know, forward approach with pitching. It's just unbelievable what Farhan Zaidi and that team are doing. Sort of the evolution of how the Royals, you know, did it back to front when they got to two World Series and won one of them in the middle part of last decade, into the Rays using an opener. Now the Giants are basically, you know, there were papers at the MIT Sloan Sports Conference over a decade ago where they're like, if you can figure out the rest, the optimal way to play baseball would be to piecemeal pitchers together every night. And the Giants kind of doing that with three starters, right? They're just doing that. When it's like, there's so many games where they're like, you know, two innings here, two innings there, and it's working out great for them. But what I was getting back to, I'm sorry, I go to on a side with the Giants. But the Giants-Diamondbacks game on Saturday, I had the Giants, and they're winning. It's, I don't remember how much they were winning by. I think they were winning by one run. I had a five-inning bet and then a full-game bet. And, you know, there's a strike three that, excuse me, there's a ball way outside on a Giants batter that gets called a strike, end of inning. We go to the Diamondbacks side of it. So they're down a run. This is in the top of the fifth. There's a strike three from Sean Manaea. I can't remember the batter. It's called a ball. And of course, the next pitch is a bases clearing, two out, you know, double. And so the Diamondbacks go up. Now the Giants, because they're amazing, ended up getting two runs in the bottom half, and it ended up being tied after five. But, like, I was livid, Mark, after the top of the fifth inning. Livid. Go ahead.
These bad calls are having material consequences in the games. And what if you had that guy in fantasy? Or what if you had a fantasy team and you're playing against that guy?
Right.
And so I don't think, you know, so here's two things. Like, I don't think the sponsors are real happy with that. I don't think the DraftKings of the world want that to happen. I think that they want as clean of a game as possible. And I really think at MLB's core is they want as pure and clean of a game as possible as well. And so I think that there needs to be some action taken over the offseason as far as this goes, but they've just been slow to do it. But remember, we were talking about the video review back when we first started doing this, mm-hmm. and we didn't think that it would ever happen, but they actually changed that. And so think about, like, how that like affects the game. And even as a bettor, like last night, there was an overturn call. They called Fletcher from the Angels safe at first base. I had a bet on the Angels, but even though the call went against me, and this is my point, I felt, hey, this is okay. That's the right call. And, let's move on.
That's right.
So I think that it'll be good for everybody, the game as a whole. So I'd like to see that, Gil.
I mean, even Shohei, right? As great as Shohei is, I don't know if you watched the Angels game last night. He had a great night, both, you know, hitting two home runs and pitching a great game. But he got a bunch of calls too, pitching, where I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, that worked out nicely for Shohei as well. There was one other example. Oh, you just jogged my memory. Yes, we shouldn't forget that. You know, a decade ago, or when I, you know, the timeline escapes me now, but, like, I distinctly remember, this is more than a decade ago, I think, or maybe it was a decade. My time frame is all jacked up, so I think it's more than a decade. When the Yankees were in the playoffs playing, like, the Justin Morneau, Joe Mauer twins, so we're talking in the 2000s, in the aughts decade. Like, I distinctly remember a postseason game at Yankee Stadium, and I'm not making this up, where I remember having the twins, and either Mauer or Morneau went down the left field line, and the ball was 2 inches inside the foul line. Like, it was a fair ball, should have been a double. And the umpire was like, nope, foul ball. And it stood, right? You're just like, are you kidding me? It's brutal.
Yeah, I had the same bet. That's funny that you say that. I remember that because I had the same bet.
Yes.
That's so funny.
So you remember it. And I was livid. And you know, in those days, you're like, oh, too bad. The umpire didn't see it that way. So the fact that we were able to change that, like, why does it take forever to change balls and strikes? It's so dumb. So dumb. Anyway.
Yeah, and I'll give MLB technology a shout out. The technology that they incorporate with pitch effects and I mean, it's so good. It's really well done. And let's use it. You guys got it. Let's use it.
Okay. We didn't anticipate going on that aside, but once again, Marquez, very reliable over ump. Cuzzy and Miller, very reliable under umps, and the numbers this year in the first 80 games roughly back it up. All right, now let's get to, I used to compile these on my own, first five betting numbers. I don't have time to do it anymore, but Odds Shark, Joe Ostrowski at Odds Shark did it for many years. Now they says the Odds Shark staff, so it might not be Joe, but shout out to him, shout out to the whole Odds Shark staff for compiling first five moneyline records. And what I'm curious about here, Mark, as with all of this, is what do you believe to be sustainable and what do you believe to be just an aberration that will not be sustainable? So the biggest money winners thus far this year, if you bet this team blindly on the money line, each and every first five thus far this year, the number one team is by far the Texas Rangers. You'd be up 17 units betting them every time on the first five. They're 49-20-9. Keep in mind, they're pushes in first five. 49-20-9 betting first fives. You'd be up 17 units. This per Odd Shark. The Rays would be number two. You'd be up 10.5 units roughly. And the Astros would be number three. You'd be up over 8.5 units. Rangers, Rays, Astros. By the way, Braves, Marlins, Giants after that. Are any of those teams surprising to you?
No, because Texas has been so good offensively, and they have the widest run differential, the best run differential first five innings. I did this yesterday. It was 118 run difference in the first five is Texas. But from a sustainability standpoint, you do have to, gosh, them losing DeGrom, how huge is that? Yet they're still in first place. It amazes me. So they,
because Eovaldi became DeGrom. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Eovaldi's sustainable. He's had a hell of a year, and the stuff matches the numbers and the advanced numbers as well. But you got to think Haney, Perez, Dunning, Gray. I don't know. You know, I don't know if those guys can hang.
I mean, they're way ahead in first five numbers. So I don't think the margin is sustainable, because I mean, they're just crushing like second place is 7 units less, right? Like almost 7 units less than them, the Rays. But it's Rangers, Rays, Astros. It should be pointed out, by the way, that they're, in terms of like, if I narrowed it down to how many teams, if you bet them every single day on the first five, how many teams would have gotten you more than 2 units to the positive per Odd Sharks numbers? It's a grand total of 6 teams. Rangers, Rays, Astros, Braves, Marlins, and Giants. That's it. Every other team, and this has a lot to do with first five straddle, right, where you lose more juice when you're betting first fives than you are the associated full game line, if you will. That's it. That's the list. So it's you know, I don't know if first fives, people are like, oh, well, starting pitcher's so volatile, I'll just bet first fives. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, and you're playing into more juice, too. So
yes.
you always got to start there. And I prefer, if I can, to play a full game, but you have to have really good bullpen numbers as well. So that's a process.
By the way, does the seventh place team surprise you? The seventh place team first five is the Cubs. Does that surprise you?
You know, it is. It's surprising. I'm looking at their run differential though. It's 14 in the first five. And you know, I'm trying to think of like, it's actually pretty good in the second half of the game too. I did first five and last four, and the Cubs are 14 in first five and 18 in last four. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, Gil. I like this Cubs bullpen. So, That could be a team to look at from a division standpoint.
Interesting. All right, let's go to the worst teams. What are the worst first five teams? Well, this shouldn't surprise. It's the worst. Like, I can imagine, you know, usually when you and I do this, there's some difference between full game and first five, or home and road, or money line and run line. The Royals and A's have been so epically bad that it doesn't matter what we look at. They're just awful, right? So the Royals, let's say you're like, well, I didn't bet him money line, Bizarro. I didn't bet him run line, Bizarro. What would they be first five? Yeah, they'd have cost you 20 and a half units betting him, you know, first five also. They're the worst. Athletics are the second worst, 18.75 units, you know, hemorrhaging to the, in the red, you'd be 18.75 units. Because, you know, the Royals first five, they're 21-45-12. And the A's are 19-47-14. I mean, they're just awful. Now, these three teams might surprise you to round out the top five. Red Sox, Phillies, Mets, they're all double digits to the negative, first five. Who's the most surprising of those three?
The Mets are, you think, with their pitching.
Of course.
You know, so they have had some injuries, but I mean, I think they might have the two biggest contracts from a starting pitching standpoint in baseball. And so that is surprising. And I think one of the things that's interesting as I was doing these run differentials was the Mets minus 37 run differential in first five. And then if you look at the last four, they're actually 17 ahead. So quite a bit of difference there with the Mets.
That's actually something we should track, by the way. Like, we're always, you know, you can bet first five, but you, there's certain places where you can actually bet. I think afterwards, Todd Wishnev used to track this for us. Like, what teams sixth inning on are actually the best in baseball. Like, if you, in, it's an interesting way to look at it because it shows you generally whose bullpens are better. But like, you, it was interesting what you said about the first five. The Rangers, it's not so much the pitching, it's just they outslug you. They outhit you. And so again, they got there, however they got there, they're up 17 units. Is it sustainable? Yes. To that extent, I don't know. By the way, the other ones that rounded out the worst in terms of the first five bets, so it's Royals worst, Athletics second, Red Sox third worst, Phillies fourth worst, Mets fifth worst per Odd Sharks. The top 10 worst first five, rounding them out, sixth White Sox, again over 10 units down. Cardinals seventh. I mean, the Cardinals have just been an abject disappointment thus far. You like the Cardinals, though, moving forward, yes?
I think if they can get this, you know, league average pitching from their pitching, which they've done all year, I think that they have a possibility although obviously they're going to get better. But they've lost so much equity in that division that I think it's the Cubs in that division from a value standpoint.
Interesting. Mariners also, you know, almost 9 units down first five. Padres over 8 units down first five. Dodgers over 8 units down first five. Twins over 8 units down first five. And Blue Jays 8 units down first five. So that's the thing about first five inning betting. I mean, it's sort of a PSA for, don't think it's that easy. Like, I always say that to people, like, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they asked me, what's your favorite sport to bet? It would have been I used to say baseball, everything else is a distant second. It's not like that for me anymore because starting pitchers get taken out much earlier than they used to. So for me, it's less quantifiable. I'm not as deep in the weeds as you are where you can sustain this. So for me, it's gone a little by the wayside. And a lot of times when I say that, people are like, oh, we'll just bet the first five. Yeah, it's not that simple is what we're showing here. You know, it's just that.
I think what would happen, I guess maybe outside of the last 5 years is you'd have a pitcher that would be bad and they'd just stay with him.
Yes.
They'd be like, well, he's got a contract and, you know, he'll turn it around, right? Well, these teams, all of them, part way. If this guy's showing something bad, they're not going to stay with him. So that's one thing that you got going on. And then it's hard, the juggling act. You really got to be able to balance that. And and I think moving forward from a handicapping standpoint, I think all these teams are going to go to openers and guys pitching two innings because, like you said earlier on the show, the math makes sense. And so as they see teams succeed with it, like Tampa Bay, like San Francisco, they're gonna be like, "Whoa, these guys are doing really good with this. Let's change," you know. So
yeah,
it's gonna make bottom line is gonna make handicapping baseball a more detailed process, in my opinion.
And I know you love that, but like to the mere mortal, that's gonna be so much more difficult, don't you think? Like the person who's a casual,
absolutely. You know, I had to, because there's so much data that you have to balance. And so like I took time out the last couple of years, a lot of time out to learn Python programming. And I just felt like I needed to do it because the data is not as easy to process as it used to be, Gil.
Man, I love it. Like you and me are cut from the same cloth. So the more you talk, the more fascinated I am by it. I really wonder like how many people are like you at this point, because I wonder how much like baseball modelers, I wonder what the attrition of that has been through the last 5 years. Like there's got to be a huge percentage layoff where people are just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, because there's just such an available amount of data that you, it's really hard. It's hard to balance it. It's hard to say, okay, well, this is great data. It looks good. Is it descriptive? Is it predictive? And the fact that it used to be, I think the teams would hold on to players. So you'd get more of a sample, I guess, of either good, bad, or indifferent. You'd have a bigger sample, but as these teams are seeing things, then you don't have time to like, okay, well, this is the true talent level of this guy.
Yeah.
Then be able to ride it for a while. So it's just very changeable. The data is moving fast, I guess, is another way to say it.
The data is moving fast is a great way of putting it, because, you know, at the risk of sounding like we're some of the Vegas old timers, because, you know, even when we got, you know, when we were doing our baseball handicapping, we'd always hear stories of, oh, it was so much easier back in our day, right? Even 10 years ago, man, all we'd have to do is go to a Fangraphs page, and we have the podcast to prove this, right? And we would just look at, you know, hacks like E minus F, right? The ERA minus fielding independent. We would see BABIP. We would see the home run to fly ball rate. We would see all the basic stats that we needed, fielding independent, XFIP. And just based on a Fangraphs page, we could exploit baseball. You talk about like pitchers who sucked that they would stick with, and we could exploit that. It was also like, I remember, let's just go back 9 years, when Jacob deGrom was having his first year with the Mets, 2014. So it was before he was really Jacob deGrom, right? Before he was winning his Cy Youngs. And I just remember that summer backing him over and over and over again at really favorable prices, like dog and short favorite prices. And you just remember, you're like, that couldn't exist today, right? Because someone who comes out now, people know about him so quickly, and those numbers don't last more than 2 or 3 starts, tops. So it's more difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, to get to what you did, Derek Lowe, like you kept betting against Derek Lowe, and they kept throwing him out there. That wouldn't happen right now.
Wouldn't happen.
He'd be done.
We almost had to pour out a 40 when they decided to send him down. We're like, oh, that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was fun. I'm so glad. I'm so sad that they took him away from us. All right. And here's the last thing. First innings. Now, a lot of people like to bet first innings. Jason Weingarten and I, for years on the show, on a numbers game and on the podcast, we've talked about betting yes, no's. Yes, will a run be scored? No, a run will not be scored in the first inning. Now, what's interesting is that when we used to do it, it felt like we were the only ones. Obviously, we weren't the only ones, but we were one of very few people doing it. And there was a method to what we were doing, and I said many years on the show, I said, it's the one thing I will not reveal the secret sauce to. What has been fascinating to watch is how there's been a sort of cottage industry developed now on yes, first run inning, and no, first run inning, and how people gravitate to the no, which is not what you're supposed to do, by the way. So a lot of sports books sort of exploit that, and they promote those bets. And they're promoting it in a way that is kind of leading you astray. But one of the things that we have always tracked, and it is not exactly that key to betting yes, no first inning runs, but can inform your bigger wagers, is how pitchers perform right out of the gate. Just the first frame, the very first inning. And so what we do here, and this is proprietary on this show, you won't hear it anywhere else, this is minimum 40 plate appearances. I set it at 40, Mark, through 80 games. Maybe you want to adjust that. But I said minimum 40 plate appearances against. This is opposing hitters on base percentage. The worst starting pitchers in baseball in the first inning this year. Jack Flaherty of the Cardinals. Wow, I wouldn't have expected that before the season. 480 on base against in the first inning. Luke Weaver of the Reds, 470 on base against. Then you have Ronzi Contreras of the Pittsburgh Pirates, third worst. Ryan Weathers of the Padres, fourth worst, and then Luis Ortiz, another pirate, another bucko, fifth worst in terms of the first inning. Do you run those numbers? Do you have others in there?
Oh, I've got, they're consistent with what you have, okay. Top to bottom. But I'm just trying to see if there's like a bigger name down the line that
Lance Lynn is a top 10 worst. Alec Manoah, no surprise to anybody. He's just had a terrible season. He's a top 10 worst first inning. When you get to top 20, I mean,
Verlander's up there.
Verlander is like 30. I gotta see exactly how
he's
many
like
down the list.
He's like a 370 on base percentage, but his WOBA's 0.458, which is fifth. His the WOBA's fifth worst in baseball.
Yeah. Where did I pass Verlander? Where did he go? So Verlander is in the worst. Yeah, he's in the worst 40. Like names like Wainwright, Verlander, Carrasco, Syndergaard, Corbin Burns, Pablo Lopez, Max Scherzer. They're all in the bottom. They're all in the bottom 40. They're like between 30 and 40th worst. And Verlander, to your point, 370 on base against first inning.
That's surprising to me. And you know, the other one surprising, 28 is Alex Cobb, because Alex Cobb's been good.
Alex Cobb is in there as well. That's right. So, and Verlander, remember there was a time where Verlander even admitted, this is like way back when, I'd say not quite 10 years ago, but I remember when Verlander would admit publicly, I don't know what it is, but I'm never ready in the first inning. I only settle down in the second. And he used to say, he goes, maybe I should just start warming up earlier, right? And then he won another Cy Young or whatever since then. But that used to be a thing with him, that he sucked in the first inning, and here we are again, and he's sucking in the first inning. So
that's interesting. I'll have to look at his historical numbers on that. That'll give me food for thought for today, Gil.
Okay.
Good poll on that.
All right. And the best in the first inning thus far this year, Hunter Green is your best. 136 opposing on base against first inning. And then after him comes a sort of who's who. Yu Darvish, Jesus Luzardo, Framber Valdez, Sonny Gray, Christian Javier. I guess Joe Ryan fell after last night's performance. I don't see him anymore, but he was in there, but he's not there anymore. But anyway, all those guys, fantastic in the first inning thus far this year, minimum 40 plate appearances against. A lot of those sound pretty sustainable to you, I would imagine.
Yeah, those are pretty good pitchers that you just mentioned. I thought it was interesting. Graham Ashcraft, I have it 216. I don't know where you have.
He's top 10. Graham. He's 10th, 216. Exactly. Graham Ashcraft.
Okay, so we're on that. And then this one's interesting to me. This pitcher's interesting to me because I follow the Angels a lot. Reed Detmers is top 10, 220 as I have him. And I think that guy's sustainable. I think that could be the Angels' missing piece there. So they could go, if Detmers can pitch like he has the last couple times, they go, Ohtani, Detmers. They have two legitimate, like, you know, top level. You can't compare Detmers with Ohtani, but you can, you know, if you can just get that kind of production with that lineup, there might be something to that Angels team, Gil.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, you see when you delve into these kind of, when you get more granular like this, because we talked about how, starting pitchers, if you bet these starting pitchers blindly, they would have been the biggest hemorrhagers of money thus far this year. Well, Blake Snell was on the bottom 10, and we quickly said, well, he's pitching great now. He won't last year long. First innings, he's top 15 best first innings. You know who else is top 15 best first innings and is having a horrible year by any measure? Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins. So you do see, you know, when you get a little granular, like, okay, maybe this is what's going to win out in the end if they start games this well. Like, you know, again, this is only first time. This is, not only is it only first time through the order, it's oftentimes first three batters, right? So a lot of these guys, you have to look at their attrition second time through, third time through. Like Ohtani, they were talking about last night. Ohtani is great first time through and third time through, but he's not as good second time through, which is really interesting, right? Usually doesn't work that way.
That's interesting, but I think you have touched upon something that's actionable. If you can find somebody, like, I'm looking at Strider and he's like 250 in 25th place, but like, I don't have Strider as a 25th pitcher by my ratings. I have him number one by a lot. So maybe he's a guy that you wait and you bet some live stuff on after that first inning. And you could compare the guys' prowess, I guess, in the first inning to the rest of the game, and maybe come up with some good live ideas. So that's one of the beauties of doing this show with you, Gil, is like you inspire thought on me, which is cool. I mean,
it reveals stuff. Like, we don't do this. That's why we do it every quarter, because it's sort of, we like to be surprised by what we find, because you're into baseball as much as anybody, and even you are surprised by certain things. Let's end with something you just said, because that's basically the derivatives we wanted to go through, all the way from umps to first fives to first innings, you know, stuff that's more widely available, stuff that's less widely available. But you bring up Spencer Strider. So I opened a numbers game this morning because of Ohtani's great night last night, both hitting and pitching. And I talked about how Ohtani, I mean, he's minus 1400 to win AL MVP. Only an injury or a trade to the National League could beat him now. So then I was like, okay, well, could he win the AL Cy Young? He's 11-1. He's the fifth shortest shot. And you have guys like McClanahan, who is the shortest shot above him, and three other guys like Valdez, for instance. And my theory was, you know, he does lead in three big categories, right? Like batting average against and his strikeout rate are two of them just off the top of my head. But would they vote him Cy Young if they're going to give him the MVP? And my thought is, humans are humans. They're dumb. They probably won't, right? Like, he would have to just go ridiculous. And Tom Tango, who's got the most tried and true, Tom Tango, who invented fielding independent pitching, for instance, FIP, FIP, Tom Tango has the most reliable Cy Young point system there ever was, which has nothing to do with advanced stats, right? I won't bore you with the formula, but it's like the simplest formula for coming up with it. And the last 6 years, 12 different Cy Youngs, AL and NL, he has picked 7 out of the last 12 perfectly. He's got McClanahan as his top Cy Young guy right now. He's also the shortest in the market in the American League. The interesting part comes in the National League, because I went through this, and we'll end on this. You brought up Strider. I went through the exercise yesterday where I'm like, okay, I was talking about Ohtani. I figured Ohtani's not going to get Cy Young. What about the National League? National League is far more fascinating, because when I went through the numbers, and what I care about is ERA juxtaposed against FIP and XFIP, but also your expected ERA. I care about, you know, your WAR, your win-loss record a little bit, but your K rate, your walk rate, batting average against, WHIP. Like, I'm going through all these different numbers. And when I go through that, really the guy that ends up leading in most, or is just about to lead in even more, is Strider. And Strider's plus 750. And I texted Jason last night. I'm like, how is Spencer Strider plus 750? He shouldn't be. There's no way. I'm going to bet that tomorrow, meaning today. And I think I am going to bet that, Mark. And it sounds like you kind of agree with me. Before you answer, I just want to add the Tom Tango point, though. So Tango does it much simpler. You know who his number one NL Cy Young guy is right now? I'll give you 5 guesses.
I hope it's Strider.
It's not.
I don't know. This is a market where I'm like, I'm with you. I'm like perplexed on it. It's like Strider's the best pitcher. Strikeouts, best in baseball. Wins, losses, which I did a little bit of a study last year on the Cy Young, and wins, losses, and strikeouts are really two of the key drivers.
Yes.
And he's there too. So maybe Kershaw. Maybe Kershaw.
Nope. So the market right now has, we'll use the DraftKings numbers. Zach Gallen is plus 165 to win the National League Cy Young Award. Clayton Kershaw's plus 425. Strider's plus 750. Which to me is just like, man, it's such bang for your buck on that. Logan Webb of the Giants is 9-1. Zach Wheeler's 9-1. It's none of those guys. It's Marcus Stroman of the Cubs, according to Tango right now, who's 20-1. And again, based on his super simple formula, and I'll try to find that here as I speak, it has nothing to do with those advanced stats that I just talked about. So he loves, again, what he is basically getting at is, you and I can talk till we're blue in the face about, well, yeah, I mean, Spencer Strider's strikeout percentage is 38.2%. I mean, that's the most incredible thing we've ever seen in our lives. But it doesn't matter to the average Cy Young voter. They're like, I'm sorry, what's his batting average against and what's his win-loss record? Like, that kind of thing.
What are they looking at? ERA? That's terrible. So terrible.
I'm going to give you the Tango formula for Cy Young, and you're just going to laugh. And then he's going to laugh back in your face, because he's going to be like, I've hit 7 of 12, and not only have I hit 7 of the last 12, but I almost give you the exact order every time. So here's his formula. Let me see, call up my laptop juiced out, but I'm doing it on my phone, so it's taking a second. But here it is. The Tom Tango Cy Young points formula. I know, boys and girls, you didn't think there'd be math on this show, but it's really simple. It's innings pitched divided by 2 minus earned runs. So that's a fraction, right? Innings pitched is the numerator. 2 minus earned runs is the denominator, plus strikeouts divided by 10, plus wins. Exactly what you were just saying. Strikeouts and wins. They matter.
I think the strikeouts and wins do too. I guess he's got earned runs in there. So
he does have earned runs.
That would hurt Strider a little bit because he has given up more. So, I can't see. How about watching both guys and saying, oh my God, look at this guy. Like
exactly.
You watch Strider pitch. It's just, it is impressive. And I've watched a lot of pitchers in my day, starting when I was 9 years old, Nolan Ryan, who I loved, and he's a great pitcher. But like, I hate to say this, Gil, but I think Strider's better than Nolan Ryan. I really do. So
here's the thing. The comp is exactly great minds. The comp for Strider, based on his high strikeout rate, the low batting average against, is Nolan Ryan historically. You know what Nolan Ryan never did, Mark? Never won a Cy Young. Never. It's one of the most...
Crazy, Gil. That is such a crazy number. Wow.
Never won a Cy Young. Most no-hitters in the history of baseball, 7. He had the most one-hitters. He had the most two-hitters. Like, this dude was out of control. By the way, great documentary recommendation on Netflix, Facing Nolan. Never won a Cy Young. Why didn't he win a Cy Young? Because he had a really high walk rate, and so kind of too does Strider.
True story, but I think that the wins are important. So I think that the wins, he played on some crappy teams. And
he did.
The Braves are probably the best team in baseball this year. So that's going to help.
That's exactly right. They're the best team in baseball, and he's 9-2, Strider. So I'm going out. I don't have it in pocket yet, but I'm going out and I'm betting him plus 750 today. The only other baseball bets that I have in pocket awards wise, I have Luis Arraez of the Miami Marlins. I got him at 80-1 to win National League MVP. The entire theory being that if he hits 400, they got to give it to him. Now, I know that's a debate, but my whole thing was, and why I got him, by the way, he's 25-1 now. My whole thing was in 2012, you and I used to do a podcast at the time. I don't know if you'll remember this conversation. It was a debate between Miguel Cabrera and Mike Trout. For those who have listened to Betting Dork and Beating the Book for years, you'll remember this. It was a debate between Cabrera and Mike Trout. And my point in 2012 was they haven't had a triple crown in 45 years, right? Carl Yastrzemski in 1967. You cannot talk about something for 45 years, this hallowed baseball thing, this triple crown, and then decide arbitrarily when someone finally does it, which Miguel Cabrera did, oh, we like Mike Trout's newfangled metrics better. No, you have to give it to Miguel Cabrera, and they did, to their credit. Now, the next year, you can give it to Trout, you can give it to everybody else you want to, and they did. They give it to Trout the next year. But that year, you had to give it to Cabrera. My thing with hitting 400, and by the way, Arraez is still a huge long shot to get there. As we do this on June 28th, he's hitting 399. But if he hits 400, which hasn't been done since 1941 and Ted Williams 406. And we've had flirtations. George Brett in our childhood, most famously Rod Carew, 390 and 388 respectively. And I know Tony Gwynn hit 394 in the 94 strike season. But if he hits 400, I don't care what you're doing, Ronald Acuna, you have to give it to Luis Arraez. That's what I'm going with anyway.
I agree with you. I think you're right, Gil. And Acuna's had a hell of a year. I mean, it would be a shame for him not to get it.
It would be.
But I think they'll give it. I'm with you. I think they'll give it to Arraez.
And to your point, yes, the Braves are the best, but the Marlins right now are in a wild card position. So if the Marlins also get to a wild card, that would be, you know, another feather in his cap as well. And they would way have exceeded expectations by doing so. The only other thing I have is, and I don't expect to win this, but I have Elly De La Cruz at 30-1 to win the National League Rookie of the Year. Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks is the big favorite right now. De La Cruz is 4-1 at this point, but I don't know if he can get there, but man, is he amazing. He represents to me why this baseball season has been so awesome so far.
Yeah, that's a good point. That team's been exciting. The Orioles are exciting. There's so many, and the pitch clock is just, I knew it would be good, but not this good. This really makes baseball enjoyable from a rhythm standpoint. The rhythm is great.
Do you know, let's put it this way. Do you know one person, one human being who has been like, you know what? I really hate this pitch clock. I really liked it when they took all the time in the world.
No, I don't know anybody that's like, oh, I wish it was back before when Kenley Jansen was doing laps around the infield.
That's right. When Aroldis Chapman would throw one pitch and then take two laps around the mound before he threw another. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
No, and I think it's attracting people who are kind of on the bubble. I've talked to a couple of people like, oh, this is great. I can actually enjoy watching baseball. And so it's good. It's good. Well, good job, MLB. Now let's do the strike zone here, dude.
Let's do the strike zone. Let's make it perfect. Let's do the strike zone. Listen, we used to do Q1, Q2, Q3 on the podcast side back in the day. We do it on the radio side now. We only kind of do the Q2 on the podcast side. But I always appreciated Mark, and you're right, you were the first podcast guest ever. I will always cherish you for that. I always thank you for that, man. I'm glad we have sustained it all these years, man, and congratulations on all your success. And people should know, you and Jason Weingarten, who I like to think I gave birth to on the podcast, you guys do your own show together now.
It's great, and you've really opened a lot of doors for me personally, Gil, so I thank you for that. And, always a pleasure to be on with the voice of sports betting, Gil. It's,
okay.
It's wonderful. You know, but you really inspire thought. So now I've got a couple different things, and it's like,
I like it.
We should do this more often.
We should
brainstorm more often. It's great.
Love it. And again, Mark's appearances on A Numbers Game every Tuesday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. At Base Winner, basewinner.com, the Base Winner podcast. How often are you doing Base Winner podcast now that you're doing the Bet US show with Jason?
We haven't done many this year. I think we've done two so far this year because it's every day that people, you know, can interact with me. That's one cool thing about the show too, is like people can ask questions, and I really enjoy that part of it.
I know Fezzik's in there asking.
Yeah, Fezzik's in there. He's in there. Sure.
Okay. Say, finish your thought. We'll go. What were you saying there at the end?
Yeah, I'll probably kick out a couple more podcasts just from a technical standpoint. I'd like to talk about the technical side on the podcast because the host Scott, he's actually a programmer by trade, so we get more technical on those podcasts, Gil.
Okay, cool. Mark, appreciate it, man. Mark Borchardt, everybody, thank you so much. Wimbledon podcast on Friday. But hope you got something out of this. Food for thought for a bet today. Maybe not a bet today, maybe a bet for the future in Major League Baseball. Thank you, as always, for listening.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.